Okay, we're beginning here on the middle of Pehe Amud Bet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Enotene ruvo bebeit sha'ar achsadro umerpeset in a ruv." A person who places a ruv into beit sha'ar, which is the gatekeeper's area, achsadro, which is a gazebo-like area, umerpeset is on the balcony or a area that runs in front of the houses on the upper level, in no a ruv. It doesn't work as in a ruv. Vadarsham, and someone who lives in those areas, Eino Aseralav, does not make a problem for the Bnei Chatzer and turns in a roof. Basically, these are not living spaces. Even if someone lives in them, they're not living spaces. They're not built to be living spaces. And therefore, they don't function as Beit Dira. And an Eruv requires a Beit Dira. So placing the Eruv over there is not good enough. The Eruv has to sit in a house, in a Beit Dira. And these aren't classified as houses. And the same way is true in the other way. If someone lives in them or someone's sleeping in them, they're not osur in the chatzer because they're not classified as inhabitable residences. On the other hand, beit ha-teben, if you have a storehouse, a silo for the grain, ubeit ha-bakar, or you have a cowshed, ubeit ha-itzim, or you have a woodshed, ubeit ha-otzarot, or you have a storehouse for the barrels for wine, for oil, harizeh eruv. If you place it in there, it's an eruv. And if someone lives in there, they're also oser. Those places, even though in their current state, they're not necessarily inhabitable spaces, nevertheless, because they have the requisite size to be a habitable space, that's enough to say that they are like a Beit Dira. And so since they are like a Beit Dira, if you place the Eruv there, it works to be Matir the Chatzer. And on the other hand, if someone sleeps in them, then they are oser on the Chatzer because then they are inhabiting a space that is considered to be a Beit Dira. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im Yesham Tfisat Yad Shel Bal HaBayit Eino Oser. Rabbi Yehuda has a dispensation, which is that if the owner of those areas, for instance, the Beit HaTeben, or one of these areas, and he lets or he rents it to someone to sleep in there, then if he still has his own materials or his own items in there, then it's not Oser. Because since he still exerts some sort of rights or ownership over the area or over that space, that's enough for us to say that it's still part of the Eruv or the Balabayit who entered into the Eruv. If someone else stays there, they will not be Oser. They'll become secondary or subsidiary to the Balabayit, and we do not need them to join in the Eruv, or they'll not be Oser if they do not join into the Eruv. Tosafot points out over here that the Beit HaTeben that we're mentioning here is Afilu Ein Sham Teben. Even if there's no grain there, then it doesn't matter, because we don't need it to be that someone can actually live there, but rather that simply someone possibly could live there. So even without grain. And the other way around, which we said that Beit HaTeben Oser, when we say that Beit HaTeben is problematic, that's dafka when there is Teben in there, that it's Oser, because when there's Teben in there, then it's an inhabitable space. And since it's an inhabitable space, then it's problematic. But that which we said that if someone lives there, he's Oser, that's only if the owner doesn't have his grain there anymore. If the owner has his grain there, that's the equivalent of Tfisat Yad. It's not a problem because you have Tfisat Yad. Then if there is nothing in there, and you put the Eruv in there, it's still good because it's still a space that could be inhabited, and that's enough to say that it's considered or classified like a Beit HaDira. So Amar Rav Yehuda Breider of Shmuel Bar Shilat. Kol makom she'amru adar sham eino oser, hanotenet eruvo eino eruv. Basically, there is a parallel here in the din, which is what we mentioned, that if you cannot place your eruv there, then it's not classified as a Beit Dira. It's not classified as an inhabitable space. If it's not an inhabitable space, even if someone sleeps there, they will not affect the chatzer. And the same is true the other way around. If someone who lives in a space does not cause a problem for the Bnei HaChatzer, that means that it's not an inhabitable space. And if that's the case, then if you put your Eruv there, it's not going to work. So there's a parallel in the din. Chutz, the only exception to that is Beit She'ar Diyachid. That is the gatehouse of an individual. When our Mishnah spoke about a gatehouse, it was talking about a gatehouse of multiple people. Over there, that's not considered to be a Beit Dira. On the other hand, if it's a Beit Shar Diyachid, if it's a gatehouse of an individual, that despite the fact that it's not inhabitable, it's still ra'ui to place your Eruv in there. And that's uniqueness of this Beit Shar of a Yachid. Any place that the Chachamim say you can't place an Eruv, because it's not classified as a Beit Dira, minichim bo shituf mibo'ot. You can place the shituf mibo'ot over there, because The din for shita of mevaot is not that you need a beit dirah, but rather you need a makom mishtamer. It has to be a place that is safe and guarded, a place that's just not exposed. And therefore, the only exception is chutz me'avira mavoi. You can't leave it out in the mavoi itself, open in the mavoi, because that's not a makom hamishtamer. That's not a place that is secure. That's not a place that is safe. So because of that, you may not put the sheet of mevot out just in the mavoi itself. What you are permitted to do is put it anywhere else, including these places that we mentioned in our Mishnah that are not good for a Beit Dirah. They will be good for the sheet of mevot, because Eruv requires Dirah, because there the focus is on the Bayit. But multiple ownership of houses around the Chatzer, entering from the houses into the Chatzer are the problem, and Eruv sits in one of the houses to make joint ownership. So Beit Dirah is the focus, Bayit is the focus of the Eruv Chatzerot. On the other hand, the Shita Mevot, the focus on the Chatzerot that enter into the Mavoi. There are multiple Chatzerot entering into this single Mavoi. And the Shita Mevot is coming to join the ownership for the Mavoi. That is not about the living space, it's not about the Bayit, the focus on the Chatzer. Chatzer is not a Beit Dirah, it's just a Makom HaMishtamer. It's a place that's safe and guarded or protected because it's enclosed. So any area that qualifies like that will work for a Shita Mevot. Maika Mashmalan. What is he teaching us from you, the brother of Shmuel Bar Shilat? Tanina, it's our Mishnah. That if you place in any of these areas, it's not an Eruv. Eruv do lahavi, hashituv havi. It doesn't work as for an Eruv, but it will work for Shita Mevot. You can be midayek that, you can infer that from our Mishnah. Beit Shar the Yachid, Ravir de Mavoy Yitzrichle. He came to teach us the exceptions to the rule, and that you can't get out of our Mishnah. The exception by Eruv, which is Beit Shar de Yachid, where you can place the Eruv, despite the fact that it's not inhabitable, the Avir de Mavoi, in the airspace of Mavoi, where you cannot place the Shita Mevot, it's Trichale. That's what he has to tell us about, to Lo Tznan, because they're not mentioned in our Mishnah, and we couldn't have inferred them from the Mishnah. Tani Nami Ochi, we have a brighter that supports this statement of Rav Yehuda, the brother of Shmuel Bar Shilat, which is, an Otenet Eruv Beit Shar, Aksadro Mirpesed, Ubuchatzeru Mavoi, Harze Eruv. Someone who puts his Eruv in the guardhouse, the gazebo, the balcony, or in the Chatzer, Ube Mavoi, and the Mavoi, is there Eruv? Vatnan, the Nar Mishnah say, Ein Ze Eruv? Ema, Harze Shituf. Don't say that Harze Eruv in that brighter, but rather Harze Shituf. Gemara says, Shituf Mavoi Lemintar. Wait a minute. If you're talking about a Shituf Mavot, even the Shituf Mavot requires that be a Makom Mishtamer, and over here, you have it being put out in the Mavoi, it says in that Braita. Ema b'chatzir shemavoi. That Braita should read, not that it's in the Mavoi, but in one of the Chatzirot of the Mavoi, you can place it there, and that will work because Mavoi, or Shituf Mavot, has a lower threshold where it needs to be kept. It simply has to be kept in a place that is safe and secure, private, not a Beit Dirah, as opposed to Eruv, that requires the threshold of Beit Dirah. So this distinction between Shituf Mevot and Eruvei Chatzerot, we see it in from the Braita, because we can't understand the Braita otherwise, because they'd be arguing on our Mishnah, and that is not necessarily something we think is logical or makes sense. And therefore, we reread the Braita, he's talking about Shituf Mevot. And so the items that our Mishnah mentions as problematic for Eruv, we have a Braita saying that they're okay for Shituf Mevot. I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmo. Bnei Chabura Shayu Mesubim. This is something we quoted earlier in the Masechta, that you have a group of people that are eating together. Bikine Shalem Ayom, and Shabbat enters. Pat Shalosh Shulchan, the bread that's on the table, Sumim Aleim Mishum Eruv. That can function as the Eruv, or the joint ownership for all the parties there. So you have a meal, someone there invited all the Chatzer, all his neighbors over for lunch, and they were eating, and then all of a sudden Shabbat started. They didn't put out an Eruv that week. The meal that they have jointly together will be classified as the Eruv. And he does not have to even be Mezakeh. He doesn't have to even grant them the rights. Normally the Eruv, if you're going to do an Eruv on behalf of someone else, you have to grant them the rights there. The fact that they're invited and they're sitting at his table is enough. He's already granting them rights in the food, and that's enough to have them have this joint ownership in the meal, through the meal, that will function as their Eruv. Bami Lo, we have some that say Mishum Shituf, that it works not for Eruv Chatzerot, but it works for Shituf Mevot. Amarabo velo plige. Rabba says that those two different versions of the story are not arguing, but rather have to do with the context. It's a question of where they're eating. If they're eating in the house, then it can function as an Eruv Chatzerot. As we said before, the Eruv Chatzerot must be in the house. So if they're eating in the house, then the joint meal or the food for the meal is in a house, and then it can act as an Eruv Chatzerot. Here is a case where they are eating in the chatzer. If they're eating in the chatzer, it doesn't work for Erev Chatzerot because you're not in the bayit. But it can work for a shituv mivot. So depending on where you're eating, has to do with whether we consider the meal or the joint meal to either be an Erev Chatzerot or a shituv mivot. Early in the Masechta, we saw Machloket of Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi says here that you can place a shituv mivot in the chatzer or in the house. An Erev Chatzerot must be in the house, but a shituv mivot can be in either place. So in that instance, it wouldn't be so clear here if you're eating in the house, whether it's for Erev Chatzerot or for Shittu Mibot. Must be then that they have to decide which one it's for. According to Tosafot, an Erev could only be in the house, and a Shittu Mibot could only be in the Chatzer. A Shittu Mibot in the house doesn't work, because you need to have it in the properties or the areas that are adjacent to the Mavoi. And therefore, when you're eating in the Chatzer, it's obvious that it's a Shittu Mibot, and you eat in the house, it's obvious that it is a Erev Chatzerot. Amalei Abai the Rabbo, Abai the Talmud of Rabbo says to him, Tanya the Messiah Loch. I have a braita that supports your explanation here of differentiating between the Chatzer and the Bayit. Irvei Chatzerot b'Chatzer. V'shitu b'mavot b'mavoy. Irvei Chatzerot have to be in the Chatzer, and shitu b'mavot have to be in the Mavoy. V'havinam ba. Irvei Chatzerot b'Chatzer? How can you have the Irvei Chatzerot in the Chatzer? V'atznan. Our Mishnah says, Arotoni to Ravo b'beit Sharach Sadrimir Peset, which are all locations that are in the Chatzer, in a way Ruv. They don't work as an Eruv. Ema, you must read the Braita this way. Eruvei Chatzerot, Babayit Shebechatzer. Eruvei Chatzerot work in the house that's in the Chatzer. Shitufei Mivot, Bechatzer Shebe Mavoy. The Shituf Mivot works in a Chatzer that is in the Mavoy. So here you see that distinction that when you're in the Chatzer, it functions as a Shituf Mivot. When you're in the house, it functions as a Eruv Chatzerot. And you can see the Gilyon HaShasi of Rabbi Givever pointing to you the Tosafot earlier in the Masechta that actually discussed this machloki between him and Rashi with regards to whether the bayit can also function for a sheet of mevot. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im yesh sham tfisa diad, if he has a ownership in here of the Baalim, then that's enough to say that the person who lives there, he rented it to, does not ruin the Eruvei Chatzerot, does not have to contribute, and if he didn't contribute, he's not osir on them. Hechi dami tfisa diad, what does it mean that he has ownership in there? Kugon, Chatzero shel Bonios ben Bonios. Similar to the Chatzer, to the courtyard of Bonios ben Bonios. Bonios ben Bonios was an extremely wealthy individual. The Oruch says that the person that's mentioned here is really Saban ben Nanas, was his name. But this person was extremely wealthy, and he used to allow people to come stay, aniyim, or people that needed some sort of shelter or housing, he used to allow them to come into his chatzer and live there. But even though he let them live there or rent there, he still had so much in the way of possessions that he left some of his possessions in all of these houses and all these locations. So because of that, he had a tfisat yad, and zip, he owns everything in the chatzer, and he doesn't need an Eruv Chatzerot there because he's really the owner of all the areas around, and it's as if he's exerted that ownership over all of them because he leaves part of his possessions in each of the houses that he rents out or gives to other people to utilize. So after the Kamei de Rabbi, when he came before Rabbi, Amalu, Pnumakom, the Ben Me'amana. He says, open up or clear out a space for the man who is a Me'amane, Me'am 100, Mane is also 100, so it's 100 times 100 or 10,000. So open up the place for Mr. 10,000, or basically, this is a millionaire. Open up or clear out a space for this millionaire. In a Shachrina, when someone else used to come, Amalu, Pnumakom, the Ben Matayim Mane. Then you should open up the space for the 200 times 100, minus 100, would be the $20,000 man. Or, in other words, like the billionaire. Based on their wealth, he used to open up or prepare the proper kavod for this person who is wealthy. Amar lefav, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi, Aviv Shozeh, yesh lo elf sfinot bayam, uchnegdam elef ayirot bayabisha. This individual, this Bonios ben Bonios, when he came to visit, he came dressed like a regular individual. And Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi turns to the rabbi and says, I don't understand. The father of this individual has 1,000 ships at sea and owns 1,000 cities on the dry land. And when he comes here, he comes dressed like a regular guy. So he said back to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, when you come and you see his father, Bonios's father, Amarlo, tell him, Al Tshagril B'Keli Malalu Fanai. Don't send him in his regular clothing. He should come dressed, befitting his standing, befitting his social status. So Rebbe Mechabed Ashirim. Rebbe used to give honor to those that were rich. Rebbe Kiva Mechabed Ashirim. Rebbe Kiva also used to give honor to those that were rich. Kedorosh Rava Barmari, or the other gear says, Rava Barmari, Yeshev Olam Lifnei Elukim. He should sit forever before God. Chesed Be'emet, Man Yinsruu. and chesed, his kindness, righteousness, and truth should preserve him. This pasuk found in Tehillim, it's after a famous pasuk, which is Yamim Yamei Melech Tosif Shnotav Kimo Dor Dor. That pasuk is followed by this pasuk. And the way we're darshaning it is, Yishev Olam Lefnei Elukim, those that will be sit before God forever, are those that chesed emet, mein tzuru, will be because they have their chesed and emet that protect them. And that's how the Gemara explains it now. Imatai Yishev Olam Lefnei Elukim, when will you sit before God permanently? At a time that your chesed and emet are the things that preserve you. And what are the chesed and emet? As Rashi explains over here, that they are wealthy people that are gomlei chesedim. That because they provide for the poor and they provide for those that are needy, therefore that will protect them. So now, based on this story, you see that Rabbi and Rabbi Akiva were mechabed ashirim, which is very interesting. Over here, if you look in the Gunya Shas and the Rabbi Akiva Eger, he quotes from the Kutei Ma'ariyo, that heard from the Ram Segel, Deyesh Lamar Mitoch Shrebi Atzmo Hayashir, Muflag. Rebbe himself was extremely wealthy. Dechein, Hirgil Atzmo Lechabed Ashirim, and therefore he was Mechabed Ashirim. And we know also from the Gemara Nedarim that Rabbi Akiva later on in his life also became very wealthy. Gedeli, Tameid La'am Shechabduhu Gamkein Oto Bishvil Eshro Velo Bishvil Torato. The Rabbi and Rabbi Akiva, who were wealthy, wanted the people to give them kavod, not because of their Torah, because of the Mishnah and Avot that says that you're not allowed to use Torah, kardum litgadelba, that you shouldn't use it as a tool to get honor, but rather they wanted to get honor for their wealth. In order to teach others that you have to give them honor for their wealth and not the Torah, they used to be mechabed ashirim. And therefore when the other people gave them honor, it would be for their wealth and not for their Torah. So because of that, they wanted to free themselves of that problem that people give them kavod min haTorah, so they wouldn't be using the Torah as a kli to elevate themselves. Others want to suggest that the reason that they were mechabed ashirim over here was because these were ashirim haru'uyim. These were ashirim, as we see from the proof of the Gemara, that did the right thing with their wealth. And since they did the right thing with their wealth by supporting aniyim and being gomlei chasadim, they gave them kavod to teach other people who have money how you're supposed to act with your money. And since they were now held up as a paradigm of what to do when you are wealthy, then others would follow suit because they see that Rebbe and Rebbe Akiva gave kavod to these individuals because they did right thing with their wealth. The other thing is, it's something that was definitely in their time. It was true. It was true throughout the time of the Gaonim, and it's still true today amongst many of the Sfaradim, which is that wealth that is granted to an individual is viewed as being a gift from God, or the fact that Hashem really likes this individual or sees fit to give it to this individual. And therefore, it's ra'ui to give kavod to this individual because Hashem also saw it ra'ui to grant this individual ashirut and give him wealth. Not in a patronizing manner where you're trying to raise money from them and you're trying to give them the kavod so that they will donate, but rather giving them kavod because they must be someone special, they must be of significance, because Hashem was willing to grant them all this wealth. And so you give them kavod the same way that Hashem gave them that kavod of giving them all that wealth. And that might be the source for why they were giving kavod to these individuals over here, or these wealthy individuals over here. So now the Gemara continues here. Rabba Bar Rav Chana Amar, back to our Gemara, which is, what is this din of tfisad yad? Kigon yateid shel machresha. If you have the pin of the machresha, the pin of machresha is the thing that cuts into the ground to make the furrows in the ground. If that is sitting in the house, that's enough to have a tfisad yad. Am Rav Nachman, Tana de Beir Shmuel, Davar nital b'shabbat oser. Davar she'enu nital b'shabbat, enu oser. So what Rav Nachman is saying in the name of Shmuel is, if it's something that's mukse and it will remain there permanently over Shabbat, that is a tfisad yad. But if there are items that are not mukse and he can remove them on Shabbat or take them on a Shabbat, that's not classified as a tfisat yad. So things like the yatein shel machresha, which is the pin or the cutter of the furrows for the machresha, which is mukse, if it's in there, that's a tfisat yad. But you put in there, you have goblets, you have cups or other things, items that you could use on Shabbat and you could take them out on Shabbat, that's not considered a tfisat yad because you can put them out, you can move them out on Shabbat, and that's not enough of a tfisat yad. Tani Nami Ochi, your brother supports that. Yeshlo Tevil, Yeshlo Ashishit, Bechol Devar Shein Otiel B'Shabbat. If you have in that area Tevil, fruits, vegetables, produce that does not have their Chumot and Masrot taken off of it, it's Muks on Shabbat, you can't utilize it on Shabbat. Yeshlo Ashishit, he has these blocks of metal, these rods of metal, B'chol davar she'enu nita b'shabbat, anything that's mukse that you can't carry on Shabbat, eino oser. Then it's not oser, because they're mukse, and they will stay there permanently on Shabbat, that's a tfisad yad.
Alright, the Mishnah says, "Eminiach bito v'alach lishbot b'ir acheret." Person who leaves his house and goes to stay for Shabbat in another city. Chad nachri v'chad Yisrael, makes no difference whether the person who's living in this house is nachri or Yisrael. We've dealt with this earlier in the Masechta, but Rabbi Meir believes that when you have a dira, a residence that does not have the resident in it, shma dira, it's still considered to be a residence, and it causes a problem for the people who live in the chatzer. So this person who leaves for Shabbat, whether he's Jewish or non-Jewish, is problematic because an empty house is still shma dira. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, eino oser. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not a problem. Obviously, Rabbi Yehuda believes that lo shma dira, that when a person's absent, if the resident is not there, then their house is not an issue within the chatzer. Rabbi Yossi Omer, nachri oser, Yisrael ein oser. Rabbi Yossi says, when it comes to a non-Jew, problematic. In terms of a Jew, not problematic. So obviously he believes, like Rabbi Yehuda, that there's no issue with regards to a residence that's empty of residence. Lo shma dira, because you can see by the Jew when he leaves that it's not an issue. So then why is it a problem by the Nachri? Because she'ein derech Yisrael lavo b'Shabbat. The big difference is, who's going to come back, or the possibility of returning on Shabbat? The Jew who leaves for Shabbat is not coming back. If he's not coming back, we don't have to worry about that possibility that he returns in the middle of Shabbat. On the other hand, the Nachri has a possibility of traveling home on Shabbat. And if he does show up in the middle of Shabbat, he's going to cause a problem. So in order to preempt that, or make sure that we don't have that issue, we say that if the Nachri is not there, you still have to deal with it. And if you deal with it beforehand, then if he shows up, it's not going to be an issue. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu eniach bito v'alach lishbot etzel bito. If he left his house and he goes to stay by his daughter, v'otayir, it's the same city, eino oser. K'shavar hisia milibo. Because he already put it out of his mind. So in this instance, what Rabbi Shimon is saying is, Rabbi Yossi here suggests that there's a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew because of returning on Shabbat. So we worry about the non-Jew returning on Shabbat. The Jew, we do not worry about returning on Shabbat. But implied in that, or what you would have thought, is that it's because of the distance. The Jew is too far away to return on Shabbat. But in an instance where he could return on Shabbat, for instance in the same city, then you would suggest it would be a problem and the chatzer is not okay. What Rabbi Shimon comes to say is that's not true. Even if the Jew is visiting his daughter in the same city, he still will be considered to be out of this residence, and he's not going to come back on Shabbat. Because once a person leaves for Shabbat, they don't plan on coming back. They have no intention of coming back, even if they're in proximity where they could come back. So if that is the case, we're not going to worry about it. And that's actually the way that we paskin with Rabbi Shimon's modification of Rabbi Yossi, that an Achri will always worry about coming back, no matter how far away he is, assuming that he can come back on that day. He's not more than a day's journey away, so that he cannot return on Shabbat. The Shulchan Aruch does bring down that there is an opinion to be made if the Achri leaves, and it's clear that he settled down in, whether it's a new chatzer or a new city, that maybe in that case we would assume that he will not come back on Shabbat, and you don't have to worry about it. The Yisrael, we don't worry about coming back, no matter how far away he is. I mean, the Jew, even the closer distance, we don't worry about him coming back on Shabbat. Amar Rav, Halacha ki Rabbi Shimon. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. V'davka bito. That's only true when it's his daughter's house. Aval bino, if he goes to his son's house, no. So there's a big difference between visiting your daughter and visiting your son. It doesn't have to do with your daughter or your son, but it has to do with the in-law children, which is that when you go to your daughter, then you're visiting your son-in-law, but when you go to your son, you're visiting your daughter-in-law. Damri Inche, there's a colloquialism that was in their day. Nabach, Becha, Kalba. Oh, if the dog barks at you, go in. Now here, Kalba is used in the male form, in the Zachar form, versus Kalbita, which would be the female form. So when the male dog barks, you go in. Nabach, Becha, Guriata. If a cub here in the female form, is barking at you or neighing or braying, the nabach is used for any animal that makes a sound, poke, take off, you're out of there. So the expression referring to the in-law children, if your son-in-law gives you a hard time, you come anyway, because your daughter's there. But if your daughter-in-law gives you a hard time, then you're out of there. So that's still probably an expression today, which is the well-known tensions between daughters-in-law and in-law parents. And the Gemara here, playing on that, says there's a big difference between visiting one's daughter, where you can assume you're going to stay for the whole Shabbat and not return in the middle of Shabbat. Whereas if you visit your son, may not be the case. You might be coming home in the middle of Shabbat because of the tensions that build over that time period. Next Mishnah. Bor ben shtei chatzerot. You have a cistern that sits between two chatzerot. Ein mimalim mimenu b'Shabbat. Here you have something that is joint ownership. Joint ownership, both chatzerot have a piece of this bor. So if you draw from the bor on Shabbat, then you are drawing from joint property, and that's a problem. Elim kein. What is the qualification to that? What would allow you to draw from it? Asudo mechitza gvo asarat tfachim. He makes a mechitza that is 10 tfachim high. Ben milamato, ben mitoch ogno. Whether it's below, or whether it's within the rim, or within the walls of the cistern. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, Beit Shammai omrim milamato, uBeit Hillel omrim milamalo. It's not as we just said here, whether ben lamata, ben mitoch ogno, but rather there's a machloke, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel here. Beit Shammai says down below, Beit Hillel says milamalo. Am Rabbi Yehuda, lo tei mechitza gdola min hakotel shebeneihem. Why do you need anything more than the wall that runs across? They have a wall that divides the two chatzerot, otherwise the chatzerot would not be mutarot. They didn't have a wall between them, they need an eruv just for the chatzerot, forget about the water. So there's a wall between them, you know, that separates them. Why should that not be sufficient to also divide the water? If it runs across the top of the cistern, this wall, why is that not sufficient to divide it? So now we're going to have a machloket about what l'malo or the mato means. Here you had a machloket, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, as to what l'malo or the mato is. Now the Amoraim are going to come to define what this l'malo or the mato is. I'm Rav Huna. L'mato, l'mato mamash. L'malo, l'malo mamash. L'mato means really down below, and l'malo means really up above. And both of them are inside of the cistern itself. What Rav Huna is suggesting over here is that you do not need the mechitzot in the water itself. You need them within the cistern, but not within the water. So now when we're talking about the malo or the mato, it's the space between the top of the water and the top of the bor. That's what we're speaking about. So according to the one who says the malo, Beit Hillel, says that it can be the malo, it means from the rim of the cistern, from the top of the cistern, you hang the mechitza just to suspend it from the top, and that is sufficient. It doesn't have to touch the water, doesn't have to go into the water. That's the malo. The mato means that it sits directly above the water. Above the water, but the lowest point. The lowest point above the water, just touching the water. That's Rav Huna's position. Rav Yehuda Amar, l'mato, l'mata min ha'mayim, l'malo, l'malo min ha'mayim. So then, Rav Yehuda says, wait a minute, we're not trying to divide the bor, the cistern, we're trying to divide the water. So what does that mean, l'mato? L'mata means down below in the water. And what does above mean? It means above the water. But let's assume lamata. Lamata means down, submerged in the water, at the base, from the base of the cistern upward, that's 10 tefachim high. Lamala means above the water, sitting right above the water. So it will turn out that the lamala of Rabbi Yehuda is equal to the lamata of Rav Huna. Now, Amalei Rabba Baruchana Nabaye, Hadam Rav Yehuda. That which Rabbi Yehuda says here, lamata min amayim, he says according to Beit Shammai, it means it's submerged in the water. It touches the bottom of the cistern and comes up from there, 10 tefachim. Maishna lamata mamash, delo. Why do you disagree with Rav Huna? Rav Huna said lamata meant in the airspace of the cistern. The bottom meant down below, above the water still. So why doesn't he like that? De'arive mayo. The water's still mixing, your question. Just if the water's mixing, what is the whole point of having mechitza that sits right above the water? Lamata mi'amayim nami. Below the water, you have the same problem. Because the water, it's 10 tefachim high. If the water's higher than 10 tefachim, it goes above the mechitza, and it's mixing above the mechitza. Say, ha'arive mayo. You still have the same problem. What have you accomplished by submerging the mechitza in the water versus having it sit right above the water? Yamalei. Lo shmielach hadam Rav Yehuda. I'm a Rav. You don't remember or you didn't hear what Rav Yehuda Marav said, a qualification. Umatu ba mishum Rabbi Chia, and they bring it from Rabbi Chia. Tzrich shiru roshon shalkanim lamala min amayim tefach. The mechitza has to protrude above the level of the water, at least a tefach. So now, that's a machloket Rashi and Tosafot, what that means. According to Rashi, the mechitza itself is submerged in the water at the home. Rashi says it has to reach the bottom of the bor and protrude a tefach above the water line. Because then you have a real mechitza. It has to protrude a tefach above the water line and reach the bottom of the bor according to Beit Shammai. For Beit Hillel, we're going to see in 1 second. But two. Adam review the lamala min amayim. Maishna lamala mamash delo. Why does he say that you can't have it stick all the way at the top of the bore? Forget about it, in the water, at the top of the cistern, you hang the mechitza down and it's fine. Why does he not like that? Darive mayo, because the water mix. L'mala min ha'mayim nami, arive mayo. If it sits right above the water, the way Rabbi Yehuda is explaining it, the water still mixes below it. You don't remember what Rabbi Yaakov, or you didn't hear that which Rabbi Yaakov karchina. Karchina in general is used for baldy. You have Rabbi Yaakov, the bald one. Tzarich shishka rashi konim b'mayim tefach. That even according to Beit Hillel, they have to be submerged into water, at least a tefach. It doesn't help you necessarily that now it's submerged in the water, a tefach, that it doesn't mix. But again, in terms of heker mechitza, then when you have it hanging and then submerged in the water a drop, that already indicates what you're trying to divide, versus on the top of the boar, where it's just hanging there and you're dividing the airspace of the cistern, but not the water itself. And that's where Rashi makes his comment, that Beit Shammai look for a real mechitza, whereas Beit Hillel looks for a symbolic mechitza. So Beit Shammai requires you have a mechitza from the tehom, the base of the cistern, all the way up to a tefach above the water line. And Beit Hillel says you need a mechitza above the waterline, but at least submerges into the water at tefach, according to Rav Yehuda. Beit Shammai requires a real mechitza. Beit Hillel says you just need a heker. So then the mechloket, as Rashi states over here, Beit Shammai requires a mechitza in the water that goes down to the bottom, and Beit Hillel requires heker, just a simple item that distinguishes. You don't need a mechitza that's functioning to separate the water, but simply to identify that there is something different here. Remember, these Yisurim are all Durabanan. We're talking about two chatzerot that are already separated, have their own areas. They don't need to do anything together. They have to have a cistern between them that they share the water. The water is a reshut yachid, the chatzerot are a reshut yachid. The isur is because Durabanan, we don't allow you to draw from joint ownership areas to other joint ownership areas, or reshut yachid to a joint ownership area. In order to deal with that problem, they ask us to put in a mechitza. Whether it has to function really as a mechitza or not is questionable over here, because it might just need to be a heker. Symbolic in nature, that you understand that the reason you're allowed to fill from here is not because it's joint property, and you can do this berabim. It's because now we've done a division to show you that each side has it. So 10 tefachim is a minimum according to Beit Shammai, also according to Beit Hillel, who doesn't require a real mechitza, then 10 tefachim is applicable. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi and says it's not the case. He says, first of all, the fact that you're worried about the water mixing, like Rashi says over here, and Beit Shammai requires a full-fledged mechitza, then even if you had a wall of metal, it wouldn't help you, because water mixes even below the wall. You can't divide water. Water just doesn't divide. It's able to seep through. It's very hard to divide water, unless it was built that way originally. And if that's really what you're trying to do, create a real physical division. So Tosafot says he doesn't think Rashi is correct in this. And the only question is, where is it more of a heker, whether it's submerged in the water or above the water? But Tosafot thinks that you just need a 10 tefachim mechitza, both for Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Just Beit Shammai needs majority of it, 10 tefachim submerged and 1 tefach above the waterline, and Beit Hillel is the other way, 10 tefachim above and 1 tefach submerged. It's a question of what is more of a heker, according to Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, not about whether we're talking about real mechitzot or not real mechitzot over here. Filhad Amar Rav Yehuda, Korah, Arba. Our Gemara says Arba, but it's incorrect. It should be Arba'a, Materet Bechurva. Arba, because Arba means Amot. And here we're talking about Tfachim. So it has to be Arba'a, the male conjugation, formulation for the number here. So it should be Arba'a, Tfachim. We're talking about four Tfachim, Materet Bechurva. So we have a case where a board that is four Tfachim wide is Materet in a Churva. A Churva, when Rashi says, is a classic case where you have a house that is destroyed or a wall that is destroyed. In many instances, the wall is still standing. Parts of the wall are standing on the upright, but you don't have the cross beam across the top, so it doesn't form a tzurat petach, doesn't form a mechitza in any way. So you put a board across the top of it to form the mechitza. Now Rashi claims that that board that you put across the top of it has to be at least four tefachim wide, or deep in this case, four tefachim deep, in order to have the mechitzot. You want this to be a wall, and to function as a mechitza, you need to be four tefachim wide. Rashi explains why. He says, because there is no reshut that is less than four tefachim wide. So over here, where you want the area to be covered by this board, then the board, if it's four tefachim wide, and we say that pi etikra yered v'sotem on the two ends of the board, it's as if they drop down and make a mechitza, then between the two walls of this board, you have to have four tefachim, which is the minimum size of a reshut. A reshut can't be less than four tefachim. That area that you want to carry in, you want this to function as a mechitza, that area in between the edges of the board that you can now make into an area that's considered to be enclosed, that area is enclosed by having the board four tefachim wide, and the two edges of the board is if they drop down. Now we've seen a number of times, we're going to see it actually in today's daf, a mechitza that drops down from top to bottom, if there's more than three tefachim under it, gedim bokim bo. Gedim bokim means that kids, not like children, but kids of goats, kids, they can slip under it, and it's not considered to be mechitza. So why over here is it classified as a mechitza? Rashi says, over here, Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, who we're about to see on today's second half of today's daf, that you can have a mechitza that goes down, he doesn't worry about gedi and bokimbo. Therefore he says, v'let hilchata kavate. The law is not like that, because we do require it, that a mechitza that drops down, it has gedi and bokimbo, it's not a mechitza. Tosafot takes major issue with Rashi from a number of standpoints about this, piyatikra yored v'sotem. One of the major issues is that Tosafot says, we've seen, we've bumped into this idea of piyatikra yored v'sotem many times throughout the Masechta, and never before did anyone say that you need this four tefachim requirement. Number two is, nobody ever mentioned gedi and bokimbo before as well. Why all of a sudden did these two issues, Rashi's raising them, and they never appeared before? So Tosafot disagrees with Rashi and says, when we say piyatikra yored v'sotem, that is simply a heker. It's not functioning like a mechitza. It's functioning as a heker and not as a mechitza. Therefore, why do you need something four tefachim wide? Because if it's less than four tefachim wide, it's not a heker. Not because it's not a mechitza, not because it's not a reshut, but simply in order to be a heker, you need something that is substantial there to act as a heker, that this is the end line for it. That's number one. Number two is, if it's only working as a heker, then gedi and bokimbo is no longer relevant. Gedi and bokimbo is only relevant if you're trying to make it into a real mechitza, not when you're trying to utilize it as a heker. So therefore, Tosafot drops both of Rashi's issues and says, number one, piyatikra yored v'sotem works according to all opinions. And it's not let hilchata kavatei. It works as a heker, and that's sufficient over here. Number one. Number two is the four tefachim has nothing to do with the minimum size of a reshut. It has to do with the fact that heker requires a minimum size, that you can actually see it, and that it's obvious that it's dropping down. So he says the whole idea of a mechitza, or the whole idea of how mechitza would function, is that you know that there's an end there. If gedi and bokimbo, and they go underneath it, then there's no longer a mechitza there, because it's not obvious that you've closed off the area, because things are going in and out underneath it. Whereas here, when you use piyatikra yored v'sotem, when you use a korah that goes across and then drops down, the whole idea is it itself is the heker. So you no longer have to worry that things are crossing underneath it, because that's not what's functioning. The mechitza itself is not what's functioning as a heker. What functions as the heker here is the piyatikra itself. The edge of the roof is what's functioning as a heker. And that's the difference here between how Rashi reads it and how Tosafot reads these difference here in this Korah being four tefachim wide, and how piyatikra yored v'sotem works over here. What you do have to explain for Rashi is why all of a sudden Rashi here deals with gedi and bokimbo for its fachim, which he never mentioned before. So you have to say that Rashi thinks that something different is happening here. It's functioning as mechitza here as opposed to heker, like we've seen before. That Rabbi Yehuda here seems to have a different understanding of piyatikra yored v'sotem. Alright, so now, what we don't understand is, Rabbi Yehuda says that this Korah can function as piyatikra yored v'sotem. So now it's mater b'chorva. So why wouldn't we say the same thing where it's hanging over the water? If you have a korah that's suspended over the water, why wouldn't you do the same thing and say, piyatikra yored v'sotem? And why do I need to drop these mechitzot into the cistern? Why do they drop mechitzot there? Just lay a board across the cistern that's four tefachim wide, and now I have exactly what Rav Yehuda is asking us for, which is, piyatikra yored v'sotem. Rav Nachman Amar Rav Arvua, korah arba'a materet v'mayim. The same way that Rabbi Yehuda says that it works in the Chorvah, Rav Nachman now says that the Korah should work that same way in the water. Now, the Gemara says, wait, because when you utilize water, it has a different impact than when you're in a Chorvah. When you're in a Chorvah and you're using a Mishum Heker, then there's a definitive line of where it stops, and that's it. You know where that stopping point is, you know where the end of the Mechitza is. But over here, when you draw water with a bucket, when you lower the bucket into the water, the bucket floats. And it can float under this mechitza and go past the edge of the mechitza. If the whole idea is mishum heker that you take from your side, I take from my side, well, when you drop the bucket in, it can float across to the other side, and then you've lost that whole heker here. Akazli deal the yidach gisa. Doesn't the bucket, when you draw the water, float to the other side? Umaiti, and then he's bringing water from the other side, and now the whole heker is falling apart. And if that's the case, we now see from Rav Yehuda that you don't need a mechitza that actually divides, that's submerged in the water inside the bore at all. This bore that goes across the top, with Rav Nachman's explanation of Rav Yehuda, now suggests that you don't need any division that is nikar or is absolute in any nature. So why, in the case of the korah, do we say it works? And in the case of the mechitzot here in the bore, Rav Yehuda all of a sudden requires that it be submerged in the water, whether it's protruding a little bit above, a little bit below the water. Why does he have a higher threshold all of a sudden with regards to the bore, when a korah on top would have simply worked, despite the fact that the bucket floats underneath?
Chamim had this misora. They have this understanding that a bucket will not float more than 4 tefachim away from where it's dropped into the water. It will only float a certain amount, and therefore it won't pass under the korah. So Gemara says, "Takara korami, harayuvei mayo." So he says, Gemara says, "Okay, great. So what you've taken care of is that I have the korah itself that's 4 tefachim wide. So I know if I drop it on one side of the korah, it will not pass the other side of the korah. So great, that helps me out. But the problem is that under the korah itself, I have an area that is a mixed area, and the bucket can float into that area, because that's less than 4 tefachim, and the bucket will flow in there. So why does that help you? Ella, mishum kalhu shekilu chachamim b'mayim. The reason that it works over here when you put the board across the water is simply because by mayim, by water, we have a lot of dispensations. We've already begun to plumb those depths, but we are about to see this again in the many of the Mishnayot here, that when it came to drawing water on Shabbat, we allow certain things to happen that we would not allow in other places. And now we have a quote of statement that we've seen numerous times before, 3 times before in the Masechta, once before on Shabbat, which is, Kedabayimine Rabbi Tavla Mirav. Rabbi Tavla queried Rav, Mechitza Tuya Mahu. If you have a suspended mechitza, does it work? Shematir b'churva. If it's in a churva, does a suspended mechitza work or not? Amalei ein mechitza tzuliyah materet ela b'mayim. The only time a suspended mechitza works is in water. Kal hu sheikilu hachachamim b'mayim. This is a kula that we apply to water. And so because of that, here, even though the mechitza doesn't drop down, and the possibility is that the bucket will move across underneath the board, we don't worry about it. Suspended mechitzot work in water, and that's period. Despite the fact that you have problems with it, this is a kula that we apply to water, and that's why it works over here. Without any other considerations, don't ask about the practical issues. This is simply a way to have it work in the water. The same way that when you're on a balcony above the water, we allow you to make the mechitzot that are suspended in air and drop the bucket through that to draw water from down below. That's kal sheikilu b'mayim. That's a mechitzat tzvuya. It works because we allow these dispensations for water on Shabbat. And the Chachamim were very makeable with garbe water because it was a necessity. Otherwise, it would be very hard to function on Shabbat without being able to draw water. They don't have running water. It's very important that they can get the water on Shabbat. Rashi over here says that the whole question, the whole premise of this Gemara is based on Rabbi Yehuda. Before we had a machloket Rabbi Huna and Rabbi Yehuda about where the mechitzot have to stay. According to Rabbi Huna, the mechitzot are always above the water. It's just a question of whether they're close to the water or they're close to the rim of the bore. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that they have to be submerged in the water, at least partially submerged in the water. So the Gemara's question over here is Aliba the Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be submerged in the water. Why does this korah that hangs across the bore work? Because for him, it's not submerged at all into the water. And then where's the separation that he's looking for? And that's where the question is posed. You could, and others disagree, and say the question is posed even according to Rabbi Huna, but at least according to Rashi, and Tosafot mentions this as well, that the question is really posed to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the mechitzot would have to be submerged into the water. And therefore, when the Gemara began, it began with Rabbi Yehuda's statement about a korah that works in a churva, and then Rabbi Nachman says that also works by mayim, and then the Gemara says why? Why should it work with mayim if Rabbi Yehuda himself is the one who requires that a mechitza be mushka, it be submerged in the water? The Rashi over here says that this answer of Kal Sheikilu B'mayim is only Alibo de Rav Huna, and not like Rav Yehuda. And that Kal Sheikilu B'mayim is actually saying we're paskining like Rav Huna. That when it says Lamala means Lamala Mamash, Lamata Lamala Mamash, you can have walls that are suspended above the water, and you do not have to have them submerged in the water at all. And that is because the word Ella rejects all the suggestions we made before about the bucket only moving up to 4 tefachim, and saying we cannot reconcile between the position Rav Nachman brings in Rabbi Yehuda's position about the korah and Rabbi Yehuda here in our Mishnah. And since we can't reconcile between them, we move on to say there is a kula in mayim, that kula will appear by korah, and it will also appear over here by Rav Huna's explanation of our Mishnah. which is that you do not need it to be submerged in the water. You do not have to have it really divide. You simply need a heger. And Rav Huna will say that Rav Nachman's statement was made in the Tana Kamo, who says that you can have the mechitza be up by Ogno, right by the rim of the cistern, and that will be consistent with the Korah on top. And so based on that, we're passing like Rav Huna and rejecting Rav Yehuda's explanation of our Mishnah. From that, Tosafot brings an amazing case here. He says, Perish Bekudjus, he brings down what Rashi says about this case. And then he says, Vazes somchim olam, sheishlam batei kisaot alamayim. This is what people rely on who have toilets that hang over the water. We discussed this on Friday's daf, the idea that people used to use the river both for drawing the water and as their place for their sewage. So they used to hang these bathrooms over the water, and therefore when you went to the bathroom, it all cleared out, it went into the water. Even though the mechitzot don't reach down to the water, that means that you're now in a beit kisei, you're dropping something out of a mirsut yachid into a carmelite. We're going to see in the Gemara coming up that that works both for drawing water as well as spilling out lishpoch, to spill out water into the river. So there's a machloket coming up in the Gemara in Pechet, and we pass in a so it says like that, Mondo Amar, that says that you can both draw water and pour out your sewage through this mechitzah tluya on Shabbat. And therefore, if you suspend your bathroom, your toilet, over the water body, it's fine, because when it comes to Dinei Derabbanan, we go to Kula, and therefore we're going to follow that opinion that says you can also dump your sewage water out that way. And Tosfot says that that only works if the toilet's built with special mechitzot that drop down the 10th tefachim to allow you to dispose of that sewage into the water. But if you simply have the bathroom that has walls around it from tzniut, that are placed around it for privacy, so that when you go to the bathroom, you have privacy, but those mechitzot were not put there in particular to allow you to pour the sewage into the water below, they do not work. Because we do not paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah says that there should be no less than a mechitzah that crosses across the top of the boor that's suspended. That should work over here. We do not paskin that way. So a pre-existing mechitzah is not enough. You have to have a separate mechitzah that gives you a hekker that there's something different over here. So too over here by the bathroom, if there's just walls around the bathroom or the toilet so that you have privacy, that's not enough. You'll have to suspend the mechitzot below it that are 10 tefachim in order to allow you to have this dispensation of dumping the sewage out into the water. But that's all premised on the fact that we paskin like Rav Huna. And that's based on the girsa that we have in our Gemara, which is the Ella. Ella is kal she'ekilu b'mayim, means that the Gemara says that this is a dispensation that we have by water. When we say Ella, Ella means that we reject the statement before, that position of Rav Yehuda, and we hold like Rav Huna, because that's why it says Ella. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hanano and the Rabbeinu Tam do not have the girsa of Ella, and because of that, they say we do paskin like Rav Yehuda and not like Rav Huna. And therefore, they believe that the question is not only on Rav Yehuda here, but on Rav Huna himself. And when the Gemara asks, Kal she'ekilu b'mayim, that is an application of both the Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna over here. And the question is that both Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna require that there be a bor, a cistern, that has real mechitzot around it. And the dispensation over here to utilize it is based on the fact that you're dealing with a real reshut yachid that is a problem midi rabbanan. The way that Rav Nachman describes Rav Yehuda, he allows you to use the Korah even when we're not dealing with a reshut yachid, even dealing with a carmelite. And there you don't have the mechitzot, you don't have the same structure that we have over here. The Gemara's answer is, Kal she'ekilu b'mayim, that the kula b'mayim allows you to use these mechitzot to help you out even in a situation where the water below is a carmelite, and not only when it's a reshut yachid, like the case of Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah. But in that case, then we possibly could paskin like Rav Yehuda and not like Rav Huna. As we see, Rav, Rabbi Chiya, and Rabbi Yaakov Karcha all explain Rav Yehuda's position on the previous amud. And that would mean that that heter of kal she'ekilu b'mayim might only apply by a korah, but when it comes to mechitzah, if we pass on like Rav Yehuda, then you wouldn't need shikua b'mayim. Right, now we go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, I'm Rav Yehuda, lo tehei mechitzah. The mechitzah that's in the yard going across the cistern should be sufficient. The wall that exists between the two chatzerot that also runs over the top of the cistern should be sufficient to divide between them. Why do you need anything more than that? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, who says this, subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yossi. Damar mechitzah tluya muteret afilu biyabasha. That a suspended mechitzah helps even on dry ground. Titanan. We have a Mishnah. Mishnah that is found in Sukkah. Person who drops mechitzot
Milmalo lemato. He starts up above, and he starts to move the mechitzo downward. He moves them down 10 tefachim. If they are more than 3 tefachim off the ground, psula, they are no good. Mimata lemalo. If you start mechitzo from the ground up, and they are gvot, yud tefachim, and they go up 10 tefachim, kshira, even though they don't reach the roof or the schach. So it's a big difference. If you're dropping the mechitzo, say you start from the schach and you drop them down at 10 tefachim, then if they do not reach within 3 tefachim in the ground, they are not mechitzot. Problem of what we call gidim bokim ba. The kids can slip under them and therefore they don't function as a mechitza. On the other hand, if you build mechitzot up from the base up, from the ground up towards the schach, even if they don't reach the schach, they're enough. We say good asik. Good asik means that once you have a 10 tefachim high mechitza, we look at it as if it goes to the sky. We don't mind anymore. The mechitza functions all the way up, no matter how high you need it. On the other hand, if you drop it down, we don't say good achit. Good achit means that the wall drops down, except if they are within 3 tefachim of the ground. If there's less than 3 tefachim space left, they cannot squeeze under it, and therefore it functions as a real mechitza, or in other words, lavut. Function kicks in because the gedim can't get through it anymore. And not only is that a halachically closed, but it's also physically closed. Nothing goes under there. That's the position of the Tana Kama. Along comes Rabbi Yossi and says, no. He says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kishem Shalamata Lamala Asara, Kach Milamala Lamata Asara. Just like when you make a mechitza from the bottom up, 10 tefachim is sufficient. So too, when you drop the mechitza down, 10 tefachim is sufficient. And it does not matter that there's more than 3 tefachim under it. Basically, Rabbi Yossi does not worry about this issue of gedim bokim bo. So he says, we say bo good asik, which is good means wall, asik goes up. And we say good achit, which is good is the wall, achit drops down. So he says it in both directions, whereas the Tana Kama only says it in the upward direction, not in the downward direction, unless you're within 3 tefachim of the ground. Velohi. And that's not the case. Lo Rabbi Yehuda suffer like Rabbi Yossi. Velo Rabbi Yossi suffer like Rabbi Yehuda. Neither of them subscribe to each other's positions. Rabbi Yehuda in our case over here does not subscribe to Rabbi Yossi in Sukkah. And Rabbi Yossi in Sukkah does not subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda in our case over here. Rabbi Yehuda here is addressing an issue which is a derabonan issue. We're talking about an eruvei chatzerot. It's a chatzer that has a wall going across the top of a cistern. And he's saying that the wall can drop down and be equated to a mechitza within the boar. That is a kula. We're dealing with dinei derabonan, as we said before. We're doing about eruvei chatzerot. There are a lot of leniencies over here. This is another one of those leniencies. And therefore it works here when you have the wall that goes across or cuts across the top of the boar. Aval sukkah deoraita. We talk about sukkah, that's a din mina Torah. Din mina Torah, lo. We're not going to allow it to happen. The lo, Rabbi Yossi, suffer like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, that's a little harder because Rabbi Yossi made a statement by sukkah, which is deoraita. Certainly you should say it over here by Shabbat, which is only a din derabonan. So Gemara has an interesting twist on this. Vizadkan lo kamar Rabbi Yossi, elab sukkah de isra sehu. Sukkah, building a sukkah is only an issue of isra seh. I mean, if you don't sit in the sukkah, you're only in violation of an asseh. The mitzvah asseh is to sit in sukkah. If you don't sit in the sukkah, you eat somewhere else. You haven't violated a lota seh, a negative commandment, just forgone a positive commandment. So over there, I'm going to be more lenient. Of a Shabbat, isur skilahu, a Shabbat, when you violate Shabbat, we're dealing with an isur skilah. We're dealing with a real lota seh, a real negative commandment, and a positive as well, but violation of a negative commandment, the punishment for that negative commandment is stoning. I mean, we're stoning something that's very chamur. Now, true, and what you have to say, it is only here a din derabanan. But it's a din derabanan in the context of Shabbat, and Shabbat is much more chamur. So he's willing to be makil by sukkah deoraita versus here, michitzot derabanan in Shabbat, because the context of Shabbat is a much more chamur context. So therefore, do not associate their two opinions. They might have their opinions in one area, and you cannot extrapolate from sukkah to Shabbat or from Shabbat to sukkah. We're going to keep them separate. So now Gemara says, if that's the case, v'im tomar oto maaseh shenaseh b'tzipori. This incident in Tzipori, alpin mei naaseh, who is the position that they subscribe to Paskin for this incident in Tzipori, which Gemara is about to describe, this incident in Tzipori. Lo alpi Rabbi Yossi. It's certainly not alpi Rabbi Yossi, because we just said now Rabbi Yossi is relegated to Sukkah. Doesn't apply to Shabbat. And this incident happened on Shabbat. Now, here we don't say below Alpi Rabbi Yehuda. There are Girsaot that add below Alpi Rabbi Yehuda here because the incident happened in Tzipori. In Tzipori, Rabbi Yossi was the Morad Atra. Rabbi Yehuda was not in Tzipori. So it was no question they weren't following the position of Rabbi Yehuda because Rabbi Yehuda just wasn't there. So they didn't follow Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Ela Api Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Naseh. it was Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yossi, his son, who took over. They paskin according to Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yossi and not according to Rabbi Yossi himself. Tichi ata Rabdimi. So when Rabdimi came, again, we know these stories. We've seen this numerous times here throughout the Erevin. Rabdimi is coming from Eretz Yisrael. A report about incidents that took place in Eretz Yisrael to the people in Babel. So this is an incident that he tells about. Amar, pamachad shachachu v'loi v'yu sefer Torah mi ba'od yom. They didn't bring the sefer Torah to the shul before Shabbat. So they have the sefer Torah in someone's house. They stored it there. And now they want to bring it to the, they usually brought it to the shul before Shabbat. They forgot to bring it to the shul before Shabbat. They're found in a chatzer. The shul and the house are in a common chatzer, but there are also other houses there that open up into the chatzer. So now you have a problem where you're missing Eruvei Chatzerot, and they're not allowed to carry from the house to bring the sefer Torah into the Beit Knesset on Shabbat. Lamachar, the next day, Parsus Adin al Amudim. There were pillars or there were things that were standing there. They threw sheets over those pillars. And basically what they did was they divided up the chatzer. They made a division where they now made it that the Beit Knesset and the house in which the Sefer Torah was stored were now in their own chatzer. Through this mechitza, through this division, they made them into their own chatzer. The remainder of the inhabitants or residents are on the other side of this wall. So now, in terms of what's on the side of the wall with the shul, is just this one house and the shul. We saw before that a shul does not ruin the chatzer. If you have a house and a shul that share a chatzer, you do not need an Erev Chatzerot. Except if the Chazan HaKnesset sleeps there, if the Gabbai sleeps in the shul. But if the Gabbai is not sleeping in the shul, it's not considered to be a dira, and you do not have to have an Eruv Chatzerot. So by dividing up the Chatzer now, the half of the Chatzer that has just this house and the Beit Knesset now no longer requires an Eruv. So they can carry the Sefer Torah from the house to the Beit Knesset. The other residents have no access. There's no doorway along this mechitza. They're not a part of that chatzer anymore. Their side of the chatzer is problematic still because they have the multiple residents opening up into that side of the chatzer. That's how they solve the problem. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Parsu the chatchilo? They put out a mechitza on Shabbat. The chatchilo mishari. Who is matir to put a mechitza and make a mechitza on Shabbat? Va'akol modim. Everybody agrees. She'en osim ol arai b'Shabbat. We had the Mishnah at the end of Shabbat. Machloket about pekaka chalon. There everybody agrees. Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim both agree. You can't make an ol arai on Shabbat. The only question is, can be mosif al ol arai b'Shabbat. But nobody says you can make one. So over here, what, they're going to throw sheets across the pillars in Shabbat? You can't do that. They like, if you had a clothesline that went across, and they hung the sheet over the clothesline, that would be an ol arai. The mechitza that's hanging down from the clothesline. No, it's just vertical, totally vertical. Mechitza has no requirement on the horizontal, only has a requirement on the vertical. Oh, so that's a good question. What you're asking is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot in Shabbat. Rashi says in Shabbat, ol only applies to roof, does not apply to walls. Tosafot disagrees and says that ol even applies to walls. One of his proofs from these Gemaras right here. Here the Gemara is clearly asking about ol arai when it's talking about something that's vertical and not horizontal. What's Rashi going to do with these situations where you have it standing up? So Rashi's going to have to talk about it from a different perspective, but you're right. Your question deals with that machlokes Rashi and Tosafot in the Gemara in Shabbat. Ela, matz'usa dinim prusim al amudim. Wasn't that they put it out on Shabbat, but they found it. It just happened to be that the guy had put out his sheets to dry for Shabbat, and he put across the clothesline, and now it's hanging there. So it worked out. They view Sefer Torah v'karubo. And they actually brought the Sefer Torah, and they read in it. Now this is a mechitza that is tluya. It's hanging. It's a hanging down. It doesn't reach the ground. Gedi can easily get under it. So that is a mechitza tluya. Mechitza tluya, how can you use it on Shabbat? We just said now that according to Rabbi Yossi, it doesn't apply to Shabbat, only applies to Sukkah. And Rabbi Yossi is the Mora D'Atra of Tzipori. Rabbi Yehuda does say it by Shabbat, but he's not the Mora D'Atra. So the Gemara answered that that was Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yossi disagrees, obviously, with his father and says that the Mechitza Tzuliyah does work, and that's what they paskin like in order to be matter this in Tzipori. Amar Rabbo, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya Amru Devar Echad. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya say one thing. Rabbi Yehuda Adamran, Rabbi Yehuda we know already from our Mishnah, which is the mechitza that goes across the top of the boar, that works. Chananya ben Akavya, Titania, we have a bright, Chananya ben Akavya Omer, Gezusta, Sheish ba arba amot al arba amot. You have a, let's call it a plane. A balcony or a plane, it's a flat board. That is 4 amot by 4 amot. 4 amot is the equivalent of 24 tefachim. In this case, we're talking about a 6 tefach hama. That means they have a flat board that's 24 by 24. Chokek ba dalet al dalet. Then he cuts a hole in the middle. He cuts out a hole in the middle that is 4, and here it's arba'ah al arba'ah, 4 by 4 tefachim. So he cuts a hole in the middle of these boards that is 4x4 tefachim wide in the middle of the hole on this board. So you have a flat board that is 24x24 tefachim, and then you cut out in the middle a hole that is 4x4 tefachim wide. And you can use that to draw water. So we said before, when you want to draw water on Shabbat from a Carmelit, you need a mechitza that's 10 tefachim deep and 4x4 tefachim wide. That's what we said before in the Gzustra on the balconies. On the balconies, you need a hole that is 4x4 that either has 10 tefachim going up or 10 tefachim going down. That's suspended mechitza, and then you can drop down the bucket and pull the water out. Over here, Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya says something amazing. He says, you have a flat board, and you cut a space 4x4 tefachim in the middle of it, you can draw water through it. Why? Because I look at it as if the flat plane of the board is folded down. I say here, I have now the sides of the board that extend beyond the 4 tefachim wall, I fold them down. Once I fold them down, I have mechitzo that are 10 tefachim. Think about this. The board is 24 tefachim wide. If I cut out in the middle 4 tefachim of a hole, then to each side there's 10 tefachim left. And the other direction as well, on the two directions, both the width and the length, I had 24 tefachim, and I'm cutting out, hole that's 4x4 tefachim, then I have 10 tefachim in each direction. If I fold them all down, then I'm going to have mechitzot that are 10 tefachim, right? So this suspended type of mechitza works according to Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya. Tosafot does ask here on Rashi's position, it says you can say, Pi atikra, yored v'sutim, from all four directions. Why do you need a board that is 4x4 amot at all? You could just have a hole that's 4x4, have a rim around it, and say, Pi atikra, yored v'sutim, from all directions. So Tosafot gives a number of explanations, either that it's a case where it's been midrone, it's not a case where you have a pi, you don't have an edge to it, it comes down on an angle, and therefore there's no edge to the board, or the case where it's not a flat line. The edge of the board is actually jagged, so you can't say, Pi atikra, yored v'sutim. So what Rabbah is now saying, that Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya work in the same way, that a suspended mechitza works, even though it's up above the ground. This type of mechitza works on Shabbat. Now the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye, who's a Talmud of Rabbah, says back to him, V'dilma lohi. How do you know that that's true? Adkan lo kama Rabbi Huda otam elodam agrudachit mechitzta. The only heter that Rabbi Huda uses here in the Chatzer is gud achit. The wall drops down. The wall crosses the top of the cistern, and then we say it drops down into the cistern. That's the only heter that he's utilizing. Aval kof v'gold lo. He doesn't necessarily say fold it and then drop it down. Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya has an additional step in his heter, which is that I look at a flat board as if it's folded down, and then once it's folded down, I say it looks as if it drops down. Right? He's using two steps in his heter. One is to fold, and number two is to drop it. And the other way around too. Maybe he only permits this in the Kinneret, which is the Yam Shel Tveria. Tveria is on the coastline of the Kinneret, and so therefore it's called the Yam Shel Tveria. Hovi Eshla Oganim, because the Yam Shel Tveria already has what we call walls around it, a rim around it. The Ayarot, the Karpifiot, Mekifutota, and it has cities, and it has Karpifot. Karpifot are these open areas, but they are walled in around it. But maybe in other water bodies he would not agree. So what's interesting here is that the Gemara wants to distinguish between them. Number one, the easy distinction we saw is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya. Rabbi Yehuda only allows for the heter of Gurachit. Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya says Kof and Gurachit. So Rabbi Yehuda doesn't necessarily agree with that. Now the other way around, Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya, the Gemara says, now said only his din by Yama Shel Tveria. Yama Tveria has a coastline around it that has basically walls. Walls that are either formed by the cities, by the embankments, or by the Karpafiot that are around it that have 10 tefachim high walls. Because of that, Yama Tveria is actually sitting inside of walls that are 10 tefachim high. It's not like other bodies of water. Other bodies of water, the Chachamim say, are Carmelite. This is also a Carmelite. But it's a different type of karmelit. It's a karmelit that's called a karpaf. A karpaf she'en mukaf l'dira. Karpaf that has walls around it, but it's not for living space. So that is greater than tusa'ah. We say it does not work. So it is greater than tusa'ah. But that is only midrabanan. And since it's only midrabanan, it's a lower standard or a lower threshold that we're going to ask you to get over. And that's what Rashi says over here. Daha karmelit midrabanan hi gzeira mishum otza'ah mishut echid rishut rabim. It's a gzeira of leaving mishut echid to go to rishut rabim. Oh, v'yeshla k'tzat heter. But over here already, since you have part of a heter, you already have walls of 10 tefachim around it. It's just that it's bigger than tusa. V'afagav d'agati karmelites, even though it's still considered to be a karmelite, there are kapaf yoter mi beit satayim shu ukaf d'dirahu, since it's a karpaf that's more than tusa, that's ukaf d'dirah, mi betakanta d'purta hi ha'asagi. A small fix will do it. And that's what he says over here. We just need a tiny fix. All right, so there you see that maybe Rabbi Hananya Kavya's heter is only in the context of the Kinneret in Yamashel Tveria, where you already are on a position where it's a light to Rabbanan. We'll call it a Rabbanan light. So the Rabbanan light will allow for other dispensations over here, and that's why he permits it over here. But maybe you will not agree to Rabbi Yehuda and a Chatzer, where you're dealing with a boar between a Chatzer, where they both share the water. It's clear that they're both drawing from the water, and there you have a Mechitza sitting above. Maybe he would not agree with that position. So then the Gemara now continues on, which is interesting. Amar Abayi. Now the Gemara is going to play with this. According to Mechanan Mekabi, who says you're allowed to do this folding exercise, now Rabbi Abayi is going to play with this and say, look, I can come up with these interesting situations where I actually don't need a board that's 24 by 24. And that is in this situation. The three circumstances over here. The first one is this. If it's less than three tefachim away from the wall, the board is on a horizontal plane. Horizontal plane, less than three tefachim away from the wall. Tzarekshe orka dalet amot. Its length will have to be four amot, which is 24 tefachim. It'll have to run along the wall for four amot or 24 tefachim. Virochba, its width. Its width is the distance away from the wall. So less than three tefachim away from the wall. Now, how much more of the board do you need? You only need 11 and a little more. That is because, think about this, the wall is one of your walls now. Because it's so proximate to the wall becomes one of your walls. Now, the wall has less than 3 tefachim between it and the board. So now if it has less than 3 tefachim between it and the board, what you do is you carve out in the board a space that is 4 tefachim long and a tefach, a little more in depth. Because it's less than 3 tefachim away, so you need 4 tefachim here. So in order to make the 4 tefachim, what you do is you carve out a little insert in the middle that is a tefach and a little more deep that makes your 4 tefachim that you need. Then what you have remaining outward is 10 tefachim because you had 11 and a little more. You took away 1 and a little more. You have 10 tefachim left. To the sides, it's a full 4 amot. It's the 24 tefachim. You made that insert or that cutout 4 tefachim wide. So I have 10 tefachim to each side left. So now when I fold it down, I can fold it down from the two sides along the length of the wall. I fold down the two tens. And on the width side, away from the wall, I fold down that 10, and the wall functions as the fourth mechitza. And I have a hole in the middle that is 4 by 4 tefachim. So I actually don't need a board that's 24 by 24 when I'm using a wall as one end of my mechitzot. So that's the first statement that Abaye makes. Then Abaye makes another interesting statement, which is, that's when the board is found on its horizontal, when it's on a horizontal plane. But then, if you do it when the board is standing on a vertical level, so now, haitaz kufa. If the board is vertical, tzrikshu gov'a sarat tefachim, has to be 10 tefachim high, v'rochba, and its width has to be vav tefachim u'shnei mashuim. Has to be 6 plus plus. It has to be 6 plus two little amounts. Why? So let's think about this again. Adjacent to a wall, and it's vertical, the board. The wall itself will function as one mechitza. The board will function as the other mechitza. Those are your two sides. And the board is 10 tefachim high, so it functions as a mechitza on the other side. What you're missing now are the two sides between the wall and the board. Now, between the wall and the board has to be 4 tefachim away from the wall because you need to create a hole that is 4 by 4 tefachim inside of it. So now you have the board's width is 6 plus a little more. What you do is on each side of it, you fold it in a tefach and a little more. On each side, you fold in a tefach and a little more. What's left of the width of the board? 4 tefachim. It's 4 tefachim away from the wall. The width of the board now is 4 tefachim. That's your 4x4 hole that you're going to drop the bucket through. The tefach and a little more on each side, you fold them in. When you fold them in, the board, we said it again, is 4 tefachim away from the wall. When you fold in those two edges that are a tefach and a little more, you've reduced the space between the board and the wall to less than 3 tefachim. That's lavud. Because it was 4 tefachim away, a tefach and a little bit, you fold them in, now they're less than 3 tefachim away from the wall. That's lavud. But based on the board is parallel to the wall. The board must be 10 tefachim high to form the mechitz on that side, and be 6 plus plus on the sides in order to fold it back in and form the 4x4 tefachim hole that you need, and be within 3 tefachim of the wall. Now the third case. So Amar Rabbi Huna Breda Rabbi Shua, I tell Meta Bekeren Zavit. What happens if this board is standing in a corner? The actual walls are a corner. So you have two physical walls that are standing there that are already there as a corner. Then what do you need in the board? Then he says, you have to have 10 tefachim high, and its width will be 2 tefachim u'shnei mashuim. Be 2 tefach and 2 mashuim. The board is standing vertically against a corner of a wall. So now the corners of the wall, the two walls, function as two of the mechitzot, the corner.
then basically what you want to create on the other side is a corner. But a corner that's within three tzvachim of the two walls. So what you need is a board that's standing vertically that is two plus plus. That means two plus a little bit and plus a little more. You fold the board and make it into a 90 degree angle. You make it into a corner. Each one is facing one and a little bit away from the wall, one a little bit away from the wall, which is less than three tefachim away. Now you have a four tefachim hole because they're each a little less than three tefachim away. Plus the board itself, which is one plus, gives you the four tefachim away from the wall. It creates the hole of four by four to drop through in the wall. So either wall that extends from, you can fold it to face the other wall. But that's all you need. The only thing that matters is whichever wall it is standing perpendicular to, it has to be less than three tefachim away from it. In order to have the fold that you make that makes it into the four tefachim. So here you have three cases where they now extrapolated Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya's folding and good achid principle and say that if in certain circumstances you actually don't need the 24 by 24 board. So now the Gemara says you've done such a good job. If you have this plane or board that is 24 by 24 tzvachim, 4 by 4 amot, you cut out a centerpiece that is 4 by 4 tzvachim in it, where's the case that you ever need that? Where is ever the case? The only time you're drawing from water generally is out of the house, by the window, by a wall. Where is this case that you need this board to be 24 by 24 tzvachim? Where it says, the avida beki asita. Where do you find it? It's a case where it's made like an asita. Rashi says an asita is a mortar. You can see that in the old French there. Pestle and a mortar. The mortar is, it's basically, it looks like a cup of sorts. If you flip it over, if you turn it over, then you're creating walls that are down. The case, so what Rashi basically says over here, is a case where the board is suspended on pillars. There are pillars that are in the water that hold up a flat board across it. You have no walls around it. In the other cases, you could always suspend the board because they were attached to the walls. Over here, when you have this board that's 24 by 24 and you don't have walls there, how is the board being held up? You're making the equivalent of a cup, but you're doing it by putting up a gazebo, in a sense, putting up four uprights, and then you lay the board across the four uprights. That's the case where you can utilize this case of Lechanani Menachavi because there are no other walls there, and that's why you need the full 24 by 24 in order to create the virtual walls that fold down and use good achit. And that's the instance where we apply Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya. Okay, we'll stop over here.